Yo, what's up? Welcome to the OK Beast Podcast, episode 38. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye. Joining me this week, as always, is Ian Purcell. What's up, Ian?
How are you, Blessing?
Dude, let me tell you, Ian. Let me tell you. Something happened. Last week, we talked a little bit about the NES Classic, and I was pissed. I think you were pissed, too. I can't remember if you were pissed, but I was pissed. And this week, we got news that, apparently, Nintendo's working on the SNES Classic, or the SNES Classic, or the Super Nintendo Entertainment System Classic, whatever you want to call it. They're working on the new classic for the 16-bit generation of their console. And I don't know how I feel about it. I feel excited because the Super Nintendo is a dope console, but I still feel somewhat like I'm nervous about it. Do you feel me, Ian?
Like, no, I definitely understand what you're talking about. And when it comes to Nintendo, if people don't really know this, is that they do this business tactic where they purposefully send a lower amount to stores and to like retailers to to make it a talking point, essentially. Like, I forget exactly what it's called, but it's forced something.
Artificial scarcity.
There you go. Artificial scarcity or forced scarcity. So they do that to make it be a talking point. So, for example, say you're at work, right? You're a Joe Schmo. You don't really play games that much, but your kids want an SNES Classic or something. And then you hear around the water cooler, like, oh, yeah, like, I couldn't find that thing. I was looking for hours online. I was looking for hours out at Best Buy or whatever. And then that creates a narrative that, like, oh, if I can get my hands on this thing, I better get it because it's hard to find. Or because maybe I can resell it, or I can maybe, like, get it for my kids over someone else's kids, you know?
Yeah. And even, like, it's also a thing of, like, oh, nobody can get it. That must mean, like, everybody wants it and it's super popular. And now it's something that I need to get.
When in reality, it's not necessarily true.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're – and so that's, like, Microsoft, a, like, major billion-dollar company being, like, all right, we're going to make a million Zunes. Yeah, Zunes weren't that popular. But when you hear, like, that sort of artificial scarcity from a company that's that big, you're like, oh, maybe it is that good or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing is Nintendo keeps apparently Nintendo's like, we didn't know that it was going to sell or people were going to want it that much, which I somewhat buy, but I don't buy all the way because, like, dude, look at that thing. Like, of course people are going to want your NES Classic. But also, like, you also have the ability to increase, like, production, right? You have the ability, and I don't know, like, all the business behind it and stuff, but I somewhat don't buy the reasoning that, like, oh yeah, they didn't see this coming, that so many people would want this thing. Because even, like, Pokemon Go, I think, was an indicator that people love Nintendo's IPs. Like, people love Pokemon specifically, and, like, I would easily imagine that, like, the Pokemon Go service broke because Team Pokemon or whatever they're called didn't anticipate so many people wanting to play Pokemon Go at the same time. That situation was crazy. I feel like this situation, though, it seems like they didn't even produce remotely the amount needed. Like, close.
Isn't it true that, like, they said, like, oh, well, they said recently, like, oh, we weren't expecting so many people to love it, but didn't you have, like, 6 months between when you first released it and then, like,
yeah,
where we're at now?
And, you know,
like, that's more than enough time to, like, to produce, like, another wave of production of it. And for the theories that I was hearing online is that, like, well, as – so they ramped down production for the NES Classic as their eShop is starting to increase in value on the Switch. So then people stopped talking about the NES Classic because then those games might be coming over to the Switch for more money per game.
Yeah. Do you know how they could have figured out how many people would have wanted that thing? If they had, like, a pre-order for it before the NES Classic came out, like, you weren't able to pre-order it.
Yeah.
I don't even think up to, like, even close release, I don't think you had the ability to pre-order at all. And that's usually how companies, like, figure out, like, okay, GameStop is gonna sell freaking Gears of War, or even let's move it to a console since NES Classic is kind of like a console release. GameStop is gonna sell PlayStation 4s PlayStation 4's release in 6 months. What they do is they open up pre-orders so that they could use those numbers to figure out, okay, this is how many we're going to obtained from Sony, so that we can then have, like, since we know that
satisfy
this many people
our customers
seem to,
and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Nintendo didn't do that. Nintendo was just like, okay, we're not going to let people pre-order this thing. We're going to assume that only 100,000 people want it, even though like 5 million people want it. And we're just going, and that's just going to be it. We're going to cancel it 5 months down the road because either because they want to put more focus on the Switch, or because they figure they can sell more on the eShop, or because of, or maybe because they're like going to move towards the SNES Classic, or for whatever reasoning they decide like, okay, only like 400,000 people in the world are going to be able to like play this thing. I'm not sure what the numbers are. I hope it's larger than that. I don't know if it is, but I don't know, their business practices with this thing specifically kind of, it upset me, and it has me really nervous for the SNES Classic, because I feel like the same thing is going to happen where they announce it, you won't be able to pre-order it, and they're not going to create a lot of them for shipment. And what's going to happen is even more people are going to be very savage about getting these ones, because they saw that, oh, there were not many NS or NES Classics, and those sold out quickly, and now those are worth a lot. And so I think with the perceived value of the SNES Classic, given the NES Classic debacle, like, people are going to be crazy about getting these things. One, because of nostalgia, and being like, okay, well, I want one of these. I personally want one of these because I want to play Super Mario World. Being able to get those, to get the SNES Classic, or wanting the SNES Classic because of nostalgia, and knowing that the chances of you getting one are slim because the NES Classic is going to make you want to get one even more and be more cutthroat about it. Same with people who see the opportunity to get one and sell them for a high price, because you know for a fact that like once those things come out and are sold out, they're gonna skyrocket in price, because that's what's happened with the NES Classic. So there's that, and then there's just like people in general who I feel like, and I don't want to play Nintendo's PR marketing department or whatever, but like, the people who are going to buy the NES Classic, and even maybe the SNES Classic or an N64 Classic, once, if you ever get down to that, like, people are going to see that in Walmart and immediately want it. Like, those are the people you want to target with this. Like, you want people walking down the aisles of Target and see it and be like, oh, dude, that's that thing. Oh, dude, this has Mario 1, 2, and 3, and Zelda? I can't remember if Contra was on the NES. This has Contra. This has, like, this, and this, Tetris. And then like get off the bat just off that, and people don't have the opportunity to do that because they're not available anywhere. But those are the people that are gonna make your thing sell millions. But yeah, I didn't even want to go on a rant about it. But
yeah, you did. Well, I mean, yeah. From my perspective, if it was me, right? Again, mm-hmm. If it was me behind the wheel of these decisions, I would try and do this. So, in our perfect world, right? We see the 3DS slowly die off, because now that we have the Switch, we essentially have a higher quality handheld that can do more, right? And now, hopefully, mm-hmm. we would want to merge our two teams of handheld and systems at the Nintendo headquarters to make the best games possible and turn them out as quickly as possible, right? So now they don't really have a a lower end, I guess, like, stake in the game. There's nothing where you can go into a Target for like $100, $150, get something like that. Where the Nintendo 3DS with a bundle was that kind of low end sort of staple, you know? So if it
for
was me,
even $60,
yeah, like a pretty low price, yeah, especially for bundles and stuff. So if it was me, I would have milked the NES Classic as long as they possibly could. Like, I'm talking like have production go for at least a year, like a year and a half, to the point where if there's 5 million people who want it, sure, make the beginning super artificially scarce, but then like have another wave, then have another wave, to the point where you have like everyone that wanted one has one, and then maybe you do an updated one, like maybe the NES Classic like EX or something, to the point where like, oh, there's like maybe 10 games on this one. Maybe there's like another here. Maybe even update it. Like maybe do like a firmware update you can buy or something. And then, and then a year goes by, a year and a half goes by. Then, boom, Super Nintendo or SNES Classic. And then, oh, holy shit, wait, they have all the Super Nintendo games that I want. And then you have that low end and you have the high end. You have, oh, okay, I want to play games on the go. Like, I want to have that high quality experience. Oh, no, I don't really like games that much. I just like the old school games I grew up with. And then, mm-hmm. oh, maybe, and maybe even in the lower end, you have like commercials or like these little advertisements for the Switch. Cause you're like, wait, maybe you're playing Punch Out or something. And then it says like, oh, do you like Punch Out? Maybe you'd also like this. And then it shows you a video of arms or something. And you're like, huh, okay, that is pretty cool, actually. Or like maybe you're playing Mario and then he goes, hey, do you remember playing Mario? Here's what it looks like now. And then you have Mario Odyssey playing on the Switch. And you're like, oh, mm-hmm. wait, what? Mario looks like that now? Because I feel like people who aren't in the gaming sphere but played games when they were younger don't even understand what games are now. You know?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, and I feel like that they could definitely use the NES Classic as a like really good stepping stone to bring people in, but the problem is that their business practices prevent them from actually like getting people on board because they only sell like one quarter of what they actually want to sell. And I guess maybe that's, again, the artificial scarcity thing is like a way to bring up hype, but that only works if you really only satisfy like what 75 to 90% of your customer base. But when you score in like 25%, or sorry, when you score in like 50% of the people that wanted your system, they're not going to buy the SNES Classic because they're like, oh, well, fuck it. I couldn't even find the first one. You know? So, like, what's the fucking point? And, like, honestly, like, that they could do this thing for, like, every system they have. They could literally go up to a GameCube Classic literally up until, like, over the next 4 to 5 years during the Switch's lineup. You know what I mean? Like, they could easily do that. Or they could even use it as a double marketing thing where you're like, all right, these 10 games are going to be on the NES Classic, but you can buy the NES Classic bundle, those same games, on the eShop for the same price.
Do you know what would be dope? If they had freaking, like, NES Amiibo that you could buy for, like, maybe, like, the same price or maybe, like, a little bit lower or even higher price, I don't care. Like, have an Amiibo of an NES that you could tap to your freaking Switch Joy-Con thing, and then you just have access to the game, to those games on eShop or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, Nintendo has so many opportunities to do cool things because they have such a, like, as weird as it sounds, they have such, like, a cool brand. Or they have the opportunity to have a cool brand. Like, Nintendo, as it exists today, I don't know. I don't think it's as cool. I think they're starting to make their way back towards that. Like, they're starting to, because, like, the Wii U era, and even the Wii era, like, I don't feel like Nintendo was that cool then. Like, they were popular. They were, like, a friendly brand. But, like, they were never, this is sick, right? Or this is dope or cool or whatever, right? And I feel like Nintendo has the opportunity to do dope, sick things. For example, the NES Classic had the opportunity to be a dope, sick thing. And it is it's a sick thing that nobody can get. And that's just like, at this point, it's like actually pissing people off. And it has like weird decisions, like the small cord and that stuff.
Yeah.
And like, same with the SNES Classic. Like, dude, I'll totally like hit up my friends and be like, dude, you see, like, I have friends on my phone, on my contacts list right now that I can think of that I'd hit up and be like, dude, you see this SNES Classic, though. Like, dude, this has freaking Street Fighter, freaking 2. Like, people, if I told my friend, like, there's a new thing out there that has Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
We'd like, go crazy over that. I'd be like, dude, that's freaking awesome. Like, dude, Renaissance. It has the controller. It has the same controller you can play with. Oh, dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, it also has all these other games. Like, they have such a great opportunity for mass appeal and to get Nintendo back into people's minds, especially with the new console that they have out already, especially with the new Mario that they have coming out,
new Mario Kart year.
Yeah, new Mario Kart. Like, do you
like oh my god, it makes me so giving mad. People like just give, put Mario Kart, put Mario Kart from the Super Nintendo or that era on there, and mm-hmm. say, hey, use this, if you have the Switch, use this code for $5 off to buy Mario Kart 8.
Yeah,
boom,
dude.
Now you have someone on the Switch. Like, oh, again, like they could easily use this as a really good marketing tool and as a way to, like, bring people on from, like, okay, you buy the NES Classic. You don't really like games that much, but you're playing the games and then you see a trailer for Mario Kart 8. You're like, holy shit, that looks cool as hell. I want that. Boom. You just made another $250, $300, $400 from that. You know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. it's like little things like that. And by making it super artificially scarce, you're like, you're making people less likely to buy your shit in the future because it's impossible to find.
Yeah, dude.
Long sigh.
Like, the longest sigh. the Longest Side, like the, it's like the sequel to The Longest Yard, except it's The Longest Side, and it's all about freaking Nintendo. For those listening, remember that the OK Beast podcast is a gaming and nerd culture-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. We are the official podcast of OKBeast.com. If you like the show, subscribe to us on your streaming service of choice. Visit OKBeast.com and follow at OKBeast now on Twitter. Also, you can rate us on iTunes. Every rating helps us kind of get into the ether. It helps us algorithms-wise. I don't know the exact numbers behind it, but it does help us. So please rate us so that we can be seen, so that we can be shared. Also, you subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have dope videos coming out soon. Ian has a video coming out soon. I have a video coming out soon. Freaking videos are coming out the wazoo, coming out people's sleeves, right? I like looked in my closet. I was trying to find a shirt that I could wear to work this morning. And do you know what I found in the sleeves? Sort of videos falling out the mugs and freaking like buttons and dislike buttons. But I dodged the dislike buttons because I didn't want those. Nah, fam. I was picking up the like buttons and I was like, yo, I'm about to like these videos because they're on the OKB's channel.
Please, please. What's up? Stop. For the love of God, stop.
I'm like please energetic stop. Today. It's Friday. I'm having a decent Friday. But if you don't listen to us on iTunes, also be prepared to switch feeds soon because our RSS feed is switching. And so if you listen to us not on iTunes, you may have to switch the channel that you listen to us on. And we'll make sure to keep you informed on that. I'll be sure to upload an episode that says, like, yo, check out the new feed, blah, 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 all that good stuff. Ian, what have you been up to this week?
Before I get into that, actually, I want to ask you, since you played Persona, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in Persona, there are different confidants you can become friends with, and that those people end up becoming your personas, like the persona archetype, I guess. So what archetype do you think you would fall under in the Persona universe?
Are you talking about like how they have like Joker,
Magician, and, like, Joker, magician. Fool, Death, Hanged Man, Temperance?
I think I actually took a quiz on this.
I sent you like the quiz. Couple weeks you didn't ago. Send me the results.
Oh, I think I took it before you sent it to me.
Ah, okay.
I took it with some like Zyger and like Kaylee and some other people, and I'm pretty sure I got the Fool, which at first I was like, oh, that sucks. But then like I read what the Fool was, and I can't remember what it is, but I think it's more like a default kind of thing, right? Like, do you know?
Well, from what I remember, the Fool Arcana is the main character in the game.
Yeah.
Like, so...
And so...
So, yeah. So, yeah. Here, let me like look it up right now, actually. Almost. Yeah, like a blank slate, like Tabula Rasa. Yeah, here, wait. So, the Fool Arcana. Here we go. So, the Fool Arcana is portrayed as a jester laughing, and it is accompanied with a dog at his heels. The Fool represents innocence, divine inspiration, madness, freedom, spontaneity, inexperience, chaos, and creativity. The Arcana is originally the only one that doesn't have a number. Thus, it is considered as the Arcana number 0 or number 22.
Hmm. Are there, like, only, like, 21? Is that, like, the last one? Is there only 22?
Yeah, only 21. Yeah.
Or 21.
The Fool Arcana tends to be a jack of all trades, since its persona can inherit all skills without preference for any type. Mythological figures of the Fool Arcana are often heroes, fools, or the protagonists of their own mythical stories.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the list right now to see what persona arcana. I guess there are 13 major ones. I'm guessing this is probably from the first game or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Do
you want to know earlier games? Do you want to know the one that I got?
Which one?
So the one that I got was Temperance.
Isn't that like supposed to be like more like calm?
No. Like... So Temperance is from what I understand it of the definition is like someone who receives the Temperance Arcana is someone who like tries to do so many things at once.
Oh, so it's like the opposite.
Yeah.
Of what I'm thinking.
So here, so I'll read it for you right now. So portrayed as a woman with angel wings, mixing up the water of two cups, one blue, one red. The Temperance Arcana is a symbol of synthesis, prudence, harmony, and the merging of opposites. Gameplay-wise, the personas of the Temperance Arcana are often well-rounded personas, and they are mythological figures associated with balance and moderation.
Huh.
Characters of the Temperance persona are often struggling to find a balance in their lives with their hobbies.
So what does that mean?
It's so these so for anyone listening who doesn't know about what arcanas are, essentially it's almost like a personality test where if you answer a certain amount of questions from, like, I don't know, like an arcana specialist, I'm pretty sure that actually when you do the actual arcana, you split the deck. There's like it has to do with cards. And
so this is a real thing.
It is a real thing. It's a type of fortune telling.
Interesting. Okay, I thought this was just a persona thing.
No, it's been a thing for forever. But yeah,
I did not know that.
Actually, if you, this is something we're going to talk about as well. But if you watch the show 13 Reasons Why, those tarot cards are featured in the show.
Huh.
Yeah. So when they're in the cafe and they're splitting the deck and they're looking at all these cards, those are arcana. Those are the same things we're talking about now.
Okay. Wait. Yeah. So do they have the card? I can't remember. Do they have the cards also? I know they have the cards in Persona 4. Do they have the cards also in Persona 5?
What do you mean the cards?
Because, like, I feel like the different arcanas or arcanos are in Personas and stuff were represented cards.
Were represented by cards in 4, but in 5, when you go to the confidant thing, it'll just tell you, like, Ryuji, the chariot, something, the something. You know, like, it'll just tell you what those people are.
Gotcha. I was going to say, because the fortune-telling thing makes a lot of sense to as why they would have been represented as cards.
But
that makes sense.
But yeah, so for people that don't know, we're talking about Persona 5, and in that game, these characters are categorized under these different archetypes, and these archetypes are related to an old way of fortune telling, which is called the arcana. So essentially, when you get chosen or put into an arcana, it's like kind of like saying what type of personality type you are. So for example, I'm temperance, and it's actually very similar to like a horoscope.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I'm the arcana of temperance, which means that I have like, I'm trying to mix many things together. I'm trying to create harmony as best I can in my life with very different things. But blessing represents like innocence and represents like forging a new path, like, you know, unaware of what's going on ahead of him. Usually those are like for important people or like main characters in stories.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Huh.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. That's good to know. I like that. I wish I was more interested in that stuff in Persona, because I think that stuff is very central. It's not very central to the story in Persona, but it is at the same time.
Yeah.
Like in Pokemon, I'm like very, I could tell you like the names of every Pokemon and every like the types of Pokemon, all that stuff, but I couldn't tell you that in Persona for some reason. And I think that's because half of Persona isn't that stuff. Like half Persona is like hanging out in school and like building relationships and that stuff, and then the other half of Persona is like the actual like personas and arcanas and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It makes me like hearing that makes me want to like dive more deeper into like a nerd, it almost in like a nerdy way, like get involved and figure out like the different arcanas and different like their meanings and all this stuff, because I kind of skipped out on that. Like whenever I see a new persona in Persona, I'm just like, oh cool, I don't know, idea what that is.
Yeah.
Or like I don't even know if I can name all the different arcanas, and I played like 100 hours of Persona 4 and like 20 hours of Persona 5, and so
I'm trying to think of all the ones I can think off the top of my head. There's the Fool and Temperance, which we just mentioned. There's the Chariot. There's the Magician. There's the Lovers.
Yep, Lovers. That's the only one I can think of.
There's Justice.
Justice. This Fool, right?
We just said Fool before.
Oh, did we?
There's Joker? Death, Hanged Man, no. Joker.
Is that?
No, you're good. I think Joker is actually, Joker is the Fool.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, there's like a bunch, but in Persona there's 22 or 21. Actually, let me look this up real quick. Persona.
Five, there's Devil. I remember that from 4.
Devil, yeah. So Persona 5, Arcana.
Strength.
But yeah, so essentially Strength is another one. Essentially each of these arcanas falls into a different type of character. And if you know the persona types, you can kind of determine what these characters will act like in the future. So yeah, I thought that was interesting, and I was curious to see like what you thought of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. One more thing about this conversation. So like, based on the different arcana, I'm looking at the arcanas right now, arcanas, however they're pronounced, and can you basically tell what each of the characters' role in the story will be based off their arcana?
I mean, not necessarily their role, but
but
you can kind of tell something about them. Like for example, in Persona 4...
If I took...
right here. Let's see. You go.
I was gonna say, if I took all the characters in Persona 4, mashed them up with the characters with the same arcana in Persona 5, would they like?
They would have a similar yeah.
characters.
They would have a similarity at least.
Okay.
So yeah. So for example, my favorite character in Persona 4 is Kanji, and he is the Emperor Arcana. So the Emperor Arcana, the description is, it symbolizes the desire to control one's surroundings, and its appearance could suggest that one is trying too hard to control things around them, possibly causing trouble for others, or some elements in life are just not controllable. And then the bottom it says, with the Persona universe, characters of the Emperor Arcana are often male leaders or father figures. Oftentimes, the Emperor character is troubled by something very personal and doesn't know how to deal with it. So if you think about there, so yeah, so I'm not going to talk about any characters in Persona 5, but with Persona 4, when you think about Kanji, when you think about control, he wants to control how he feels more. It's like part of his character and part of his story arc is how it is learning how to control how he feels more.
Okay. Huh. Okay. I can see that then. Yeah. That makes sense. And then there's probably like a character in Persona 5, I'm guessing, I couldn't even guess what character that might be. I have like a few guesses, but like
I'm gonna just tell you, I'm gonna type it in our little group chat thing here.
Okay, but I'm guessing like a character probably goes through probably not the same struggle, but like a similar struggle, I can't vocalize it, but I can see it. Also, I just saw the thing, and that makes sense. I think
yeah, it does.
I'm not even that far in that part of the story, but I can see it from where I'm at. So
yeah.
Okay, so yeah, cool.
I just wanted to add that little. We're going to be talking about Persona a little bit later today, and I just thought that it was an interesting little mini conversation. It's kind of like asking someone's like horoscope, essentially.
Yeah. What have you been up to this week?
Pretty much just Persona.
If you've been up to anything besides Persona,
pretty much just Persona.
Okay.
I'm like starting to get into that positive groove with Persona, where like I know what I think my schedule is going to be in the game, and again, if for people that don't know. When you play Persona, you have to like live like the life of a teenager, and you have like Monday through Sunday, and you have these certain activities that you have to do that give you stats. But if you do certain activities, they give you more stats than others. So there's like a kind of like an optimization element to Persona and Persona 5, which can be kind of stressful. But now that I've done some research, now that I've talked to Cowdy, I've talked to other people that have played the game before, I kind of know now what I think the best way. For me, at least, is moving forward.
Nice. Do you feel comfortable with like the how your stats are going? Because like another thing in Persona is like making sure that you're upgrading your like your knowledge by studying and doing all these things, upgrading your guts by like eating spicy food or like doing things that give you guts, kindness, charm, all these things. Do you feel like you're at a place where you're able to do everything kind of equally, or are you just basically like focusing on certain aspects more so than others, so you can like do specific things, or like how are you managing your time and your stats in that way?
Well, I'm actually going to hold that question. I'm going to plead the fifth until we get to the later part of the show when we talk about like my version of like five things that we should do, or you Fair five enough. Things that you should do in Persona before jumping whole hog in. Yeah, but other than Persona, I watched 13 Reasons Why, the show on Netflix. And
So we both watched this.
We did.
How do you feel? We both finished it, I think.
We did. So. How do I feel about it? Oh, someone's phone. Oh, this is my phone. How do I feel about it? I think that overall it was a show of really high highs and really low lows. And I think that if you're like young-ish, like if you're in your 20s, that or I guess if you're 30s as well, I think this is an interesting show to look on, because you kind of see why is my phone stop making what are you doing? Sorry.
Your phone going crazy?
Yeah, it's like something is happening with
your
my phone.
Your phone going ham.
He like misses me.
Oh, Siri's talking to you?
Yeah. There you go. So if you are like in your like early to late 20s or early 30s, I think that if you watch this show, you can kind of get an interesting take on like what media portrays like millennials as now, like younger kids now, like kids in high school now. So as someone who's like been out of high school for a long, long time, it was cool to see like, oh, okay, so being a high schooler hasn't really changed that much, at least in this form of media. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I can see that.
And my high school personally went through some tragedies while I was at it. Like, people, you know, there's a girl who passed away from leukemia. There's like all these like things that affected my high school as a whole. So it was interesting to look at how a school and how a larger school than mine was like affected by this sort of stuff. And it was just an interesting like psychological show that I was able to enjoy from that aspect, but also enjoy it from the story aspect as well.
That's interesting to say, because like for me watching the show, the thing that it made me think about was I think there were a couple, I can't remember if there was a suicide or not, but there was also a kid whose name escapes me right now, who like got shot by a police officer because he's trying to get into his own house, but he was locked out, and so he's trying to climb into the window of his own house and then ended up getting killed by a police officer. Many people like viewed it as like a wrongful kind of thing. I don't know if there was ever like a verdict or if he ever got like prosecuted or whatever, but like after that happened, like a lot of people at my school were like upset and very upset. It was basically a thing for the whole school. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reminded me, because like 13 Reasons Why, for those who aren't familiar with the show, has to do with like, it's kind of like Degrassi. It's kind of like a better Degrassi. And that might be insulting to Degrassi fans, but like I'm a Degrassi fan, and so like I would say like it's Degrassi, but more focused on like a singular issue, or more singular issues, because it focused on a few things. It focuses on tragedy. It focuses on mental state and like depression and bullying. It focuses a lot on specifically like depression and bullying, I think, are the two big things that it focuses on. And I think for me, at least, it does like a really good job of it. It does this cool, like, cinematography wise, it does this thing of like telling a story that happened in the past while at the same time telling the story of the present. And it divides those things up. One of the ways it shows the difference between the past and the present is by color tone, which I think was a nice touch. Like, yeah, the past, since like it's the two times are separated by tragedy, and the earlier time is more warm in color, and like the later time is more washed out, like post tragedy. The other way separates it, which I don't know how I feel about it, but I feel like it was kind of necessary for what they're trying to do, was like the main character gets like a cut on his head, but like the bruise that he gets is like, I wasn't really feeling it. Like, it was kind of like, it felt a bit too obvious, one, as like a storytelling device to like tell you, let you know which time is which, but yeah, also like it was kind of like I didn't feel like the makeup on it was,
I agree, it was not good. And also, he got hurt in the same place like 6 times throughout the show. Like, he really did. Yeah, he banged his head like 5 times, and then that scar kept on coming back the entire time.
And I felt like they did that only so that like they had an excuse for the scar not to heal.
Yeah,
like he kept opening up back and back over up over and over again, which was, it was kind of funny, but at the same time, I was like, I get it. Like, I see what you're trying to do, and I guess this might have been the best way you guys could have found to do it. And so I won't hate on it too much, but I did feel like the makeup on it could have been better. But it's whatever. I don't know. Did you have any other thoughts on 13 Reasons Why?
Well, like, other thoughts on it? I mean, overall, my thoughts, I don't know. I said it had high highs and low lows. And I think the highs were, there was like some parts in the story that had like a lot of heart, like not necessarily good writing, but with the way things were shot and the way characters were written, like at least with their direction, there was some real like effort and soul put into these characters, at least to a certain degree. Like, for example, I'm going to describe one scene from the show real quick. There's a character that is, he's poor. He's a poor character, but he becomes friends with one of the rich kids at school. And whenever he's in trouble with his parents, or whenever there's problems at home, or maybe his mother isn't treating him properly, he goes to his rich friend's house. And there's a scene where the rich friend is like off somewhere, and he's like walking through the house, and he's like looking at all these things that this rich kid's family has, and he's looking at these family photos and these like awards that the father has won for being like a high ranking employee at work. And then it's just him by himself. He doesn't say any words. He just starts to get really upset, and he like starts to cry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? Like, before that, the show was kind of like this stereotypical thing where I was like, oh wow, this is going to be just like a really shitty like 90s you know, stereotypical high school show. But then that scene happened, and then that's when, at least for me, the show became this next level thing where it was like, oh, wait, no, this show can tell these, like, emotional vignettes that are actually pretty true to reality and pretty true to form. But mm-hmm. it's, like, spliced between this, like, really poppy look, not poppy, but like, if you know what I mean, like manufactured high school experience, like Degrassi-esque show. But there's some really real moments in there, and like, to the point where it's almost assaulting, like how real it is. Cause you'll be like, you'll have your defenses down, and you'll be watching it like, oh yeah, there's the kid. Oh, he hit his head again for the fifth time. Or, oh, there's the Hispanic child with the motorcycle jacket on that he never takes off. And then that moment, like I just described, will happen, and you'll be like, oh no.
Yeah,
what's happening?
Yeah, I agree.
So that's one of my favorite parts of the show. That same moment got me too. But one of the low points is sometimes the story doesn't really make sense. But that's just the way it's structured. At the end of the show, it does kind of pull itself together, and then it leaves itself open to a really hard, like, cliffhanger sort of situation. Like it kind of has like a hard season two. Like, hey, guess what? We're gonna have a season two. But the problem the problem with a show like this is that I don't want there to be a season two, because some awful, horrible things happen. Well, there was a giant cliffhanger. There's two giant cliffhangers in the show, and if that bothers you, then that might bother you with this show. But overall,
For me, I don't know if those were. I felt like, because I think I know one of the ones you're talking about, and I don't know if, like, I felt like that was just a show wrapping up. Like, I don't know if it was gonna be like a. I couldn't imagine there being a season two to this show, because like of the way the show is structured.
I can imagine it. It was one of the fastest binged shows on Netflix, actually. More so than
really.
Yeah, I think it was up there with Iron Fist, like, because Iron Fist was the last like fastest streamed one, even though it was really bad.
Mm-hmm. Man, yeah, like we should talk off podcast about this, because I'm curious about what you think of season two would be, because I think I know exactly what season two would be. Because I know, now that I think about it, I can think of both of the cliffhangers you're talking about. And for both of them, I want to say that those would be, like, good places just, like, in that story. Like, I feel like the way it ends would have been, like, a great place to just, like, cut it off. Because the rest of it, I feel like, almost doesn't matter in a way. Yeah. Like, what happens afterwards, I'm like, I don't, like, this, like, the rest of it. Because there's still stuff that could happen and that is going to happen within, like, the story itself, but I feel like the stuff, like, that stuff almost doesn't matter at all for, like, the story that was being told.
That was being told for us, yeah. But Blessing, here's the thing.
Yeah.
This is Netflix, this is Hollywood, this is entertainment. If this is the most streamed thing on Netflix, more so than Stranger Things, more so than any of these other things, you know they're going to make a season two, because, like, and I read somewhere this might be completely accurate and I might be completely off base here with this, but people told me that the reason why this property was even made is because of, like, Netflix and, like, searching algorithms. Now, let me explain. So 13 Reasons Why is actually based off a book, a young adult book.
Mm.
And it was adapted into a screenplay because of what – or into a movie series, whatever, because of what people are searching on Netflix. So, like, people are searching for, like, these deep – like, as not deep, but like these intense documentaries about real life things. And people are also, I guess, searching for, like, teen dramas, I guess. So from what I read somewhere, this was a, like, response to a niche that needed to be filled by Netflix. So if that niche is still being filled and it's working, then they're going to keep on making this sort of stuff.
I hope not, but I see your point. I just hope not. Yeah. And I think you're right that there's, like, a good chance they will because of that, because of, like, business reasons. I just really hope I hope not, because it has a good ending that leaves space open for more of the story to be told. But I feel like the story that's left to be told doesn't matter. But yeah, I totally see your point though.
Yeah, there's also one thing that if you watch the show and you pay attention, there's this really big meta narrative about depression and suicide that I think is really interesting, and I told you about it, and I told Alex about it as well. But it's like I said, the show has really high highs and really low lows, and it's the same thing for its, like, intellectual capacity. Like, it has this overarching meta narrative that is, like, highly intelligent, and you'll miss if you don't think about it. And then it has this these like same moments where it says like the line FML forever, like these really cringy lines, you know. Mm-hmm. And we made a joke about the FML line earlier today, actually. But
yeah, it's something that I excuse because it's high school, and like I was super cheesy and corny and weird and awkward and all that stuff in high school. And I do feel like there's times that the characters say like witty things, and I'm like, I don't know if high school characters or high school people are like that, like witty and like quick with their humor and stuff. Like even like the main girl in the show, like there was an earlier in one of the earlier episodes, like she was like, her dialogue was like really good and like very like her jokes were really quick and very actually like kind of pretty funny, and I was like, I don't know one high, maybe I know a few high schoolers that are that funny, but I'm like, man, she seemed a little bit too like on point with what she was saying to like be, I don't know. Parts of that fell off to me. But then, like, yeah, they're on the other side of the spectrum. Like, there are parts that like feel like, oh, this is kind of cheesy, corny, high school poppy, kind of thing. And so, yeah, no, I feel you.
There you go. Yeah. So those are my thoughts on the two things that I did.
Nice. As far as for me, I did the same thing. I watched 13 Reasons Why. I played more Persona. I've also been playing Overwatch because there was a new update, and it's a really good update. Like, it has me back in, and I think part of that is I just haven't been playing Overwatch in a while, and playing it again has reminded me how good this game is. Like, Overwatch is incredible. The new update is the Uprising update. If you're not into Overwatch, essentially, like, the whole story of Overwatch, actually, I'm not even gonna tell you because I don't even know the whole main story of Overwatch. I think you probably know.
I do.
I don't know if you could tell it, and like, can you tell the Uprising, do you know like the Uprising part of it?
I essentially, from what I understand, is that the Uprising stuff is a prequel to what happened before the current Overwatch game, with how the Omnix became what they are now, like why the robot stuff is like going all crazy.
Overwatch is a story. I think it's good to like get into that if you're interested in it. I think it has an interesting lore that's not really told much at all in the main game, except through environmental storytelling and looking at like what's on the walls and stuff like that. Most of like the more deeper stuff is online. If you don't play Overwatch, and you're curious about that, like, I'd say like check it out. I haven't checked a lot of that stuff out because I kind of get the gist of it, of like there's a war and like there are Omnix and there's a split, and now like the Overwatch is retired, but now they're getting back up and fighting together again. And there's this whole kind of like Marvel Civil War kind of thing. That's the way I kind of see it going on. But I mean, as far as like gameplay, like there's a new co-op mode that's pretty fun. I think it's the best co-op mode that Blizzard has put out for Overwatch. Like I think before this, it would have probably been the Halloween one, which was like basically like a horde mode. In this one, it's essentially like you go through different points and like you take over different points, and it's kind of like doing the objectives in multiplayer, except like you're battling against waves of bots and waves of enemies. But yeah, this one is it's pretty good, and I hope they do more stuff like this because I think it's at least pretty enjoyable. It's a new character. Is it Osiris? Osiris. Orisa, people seem to love her. At least you and Alex seem to love her, because I've only played with you guys, and both of you guys seem to like her a lot. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of her. She's like a huge tank, and I'm like really into the tank meta, the tank style of play.
And it seems like whenever I see we have people on our team using her well, then we seem to do well. Like, I was using Torbjorn, who's a turret character, and I'd place my turret behind her shield, and it almost feel like too easy to like destroy people with that. But no, I'm loving her. I'm loving like the whole update. So I'm loving playing Overwatch again because that game is incredible. And I'm playing ranked, and I'm not doing that great. Well, I won't say I'm not doing great. I'm doing decent. But I placed low because freaking teammates, man. Teammates suck sometimes. But I've been having a couple of like win streaks lately, and so it's been good. Overwatch has been good. But I think that about covers it. I've been listening to more. Actually, I pre-ordered Mario Kart. Yes, nice. Or today.
Nice.
I think I pre-ordered it. So I'm excited for that. That comes out like next week. And this will be my first Mario Kart game that I've owned since Mario Kart Wii. And before that, I owned 64. And 64 is one of my favorite games ever. And so I'm kind of excited to actually, like, own a new Mario Kart. And kind of, even though it's not new, it's Mario Kart 8 for Wii U. But I'm excited to own it, to finally own this one and kind of get into it. And so that's pretty much been me. And so let's get into our topic of the week. Ian, I want to talk about what newcomers need to know going into Persona 5.
Okay.
And I think you brought a list of things, and I think you're the authority on this because you played more Persona than any of us, and you're more informed on Persona than any of us.
Can I tell you a quick story about Persona, by the way, real quick, yeah, about Persona 5 and why I know so much? I was going through some of my stuff because if people listen to the show, they know that I bought the Japanese copy for my girlfriend, and she was playing it, and I bought her a bunch of guides because she loves video game guides. Because she gets stressed out if she feels like she's not doing the right thing. So I was looking through my house, and I have 5 different books on Persona.
Okay. Huh.
I have 2 separate guides, like official guides. I have 2 art books, and then I have like 10 folders. I have like so much stuff in this apartment that is dedicated to Persona 5.
And you've only like gotten into Persona like last year, because you played Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah.
In 2016.
Yeah.
And already you own like freaking novels regarding Persona.
It's, I mean, yeah. But anyway, back to what you were saying. With this whole thing, so I've like compiled a list of things that, 5 things that I think if you're going into Persona, or if you just started playing Persona and you need some help, some tips in regards to what activities are the best or how you should do things, I have these tips here. So do you want to hear tip number 1, Blessing?
Yes, go ahead. Tip number 1.
Tip number 1 is that you can use thief vision to find interactable items even in the real world. So that is tip number 1.
Nice. I didn't know this actually, because like yesterday I was telling you that I've been having trouble kind of boiling things down. Like, I knew you could use interactive vision. I didn't know you could use this actually in the real world, because interactive vision is the thing they introduce to you in kind of the metaverse situation going on, which is like the dungeon. So they introduce that to you in the dungeons, and basically if you press, like, what's the button? Is it L1?
It's L1, yeah.
L1. Press L1, and I think it's L2 too also. But, like, if you press one of those buttons, then it kind of washes everything out and tells you, like, the necessary, like, kind of command or, like, information that you need in order to, like, do stuff.
And in the real world, what it does is it does the same exact thing, where it tells you people that you can talk to that are important. It tells you if, for example, there is a human around you that is a social link or a confidant, they'll have a blue hue over them, and then you can just walk straight to them. It'll tell you what stores you can walk into with a little yen sign in front. And yeah, it's very useful, especially for people that are overwhelmed in the beginning parts of the game. Like, if they can't find something, or they can't find an entrance, or they can't find, like, oh, wait, where's that shop? They can look at the map, but sometimes the map is a little bit difficult. So use the thief vision in the real world to find some things if you can't find it. That's my first tip. So
Number two.
In the overworld map, you can see which confidants are available to hang out. And also, you can tell what confidant is ready to level up. And here's how you do it. So when you're using your fast travel, when you press R1, and you go to the overworld map that has the stations on it. So, for example, you would have Yongenjaya, Shibuya, and the Shujin Academy. If you press square on each of those fast travel locations, it'll tell you every available confidant in that area. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I did not know this either.
Yeah. And what I didn't know until yesterday is that if you do that, while your arcana is ready to level up, your confidant is ready to level up, it'll tell you with text, it'll say, level up. So, for example, if you're, like, kind of confused about what to do that day, you don't really know, like, oh, I don't want to go to the library today, and, you know, I don't have anything to do, you can check that, and then you can say, oh, well, the doctor confidant is ready to level up, so I'll go level up with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a super helpful tip.
Usually, like, when you talk to them, the way I've been telling if I'm able to level up is by, like, I'll talk to them and it'll say, like, I feel like I'm about to grow closer to this person, which I assume is, like, another way you could do that. I didn't know you could do it that way, though.
Yeah.
So that's actually pretty good to know.
Yeah. So then Number three is one that is mentioned in the game, but I have a little small caveat to it. So always have a persona before hanging out with a confidant. And what I mean is have the persona that relates to that confidant.
Nice.
Now, yeah. So.
So for people who aren't familiar with persona, basically, like, you collect persona, like, almost like you collect Pokemon in a Pokemon game.
Exactly.
And essentially, like, your real world relationships, since the game is kind of divided into these two parts. You have the dungeon parts, then you have, like, the real world part where you kind of schedule out your day and go to school and do, like, real world things. And so you're saying that the personas you collect, of course, are affected by the confidants that you have in real life. And you're saying have the correct persona when you're talking to the specific confidants.
Yeah, because when you're leveling up the confidants, the thing is that all these things are related to points. So if you hang out with Ryuji, for example, and you have the chariot persona and you choose the right dialogue options, you'll get more points, which will help you level up his persona, his confidant, faster. But if you don't have that related persona, your relationship will grow slower, which will then force you to spend more time with him on another day, which will then waste your time.
Huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Again, this is all based on, like, point value. So, for example, if you need 5 points to level up to a different level of confidant, like, social link level, if you have the persona, it'll give you one more point. But if you don't have that, then you'll be removed 1 point.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So it just speeds up the process. So here is tip four. And tip four is kind of related to tip three. So I told you just now that you want to have these personas that are related to the arcana that you're going to hang out with. So if you didn't already know, you can go to the Velvet Room and you can go to the Compendium and you can actually revive persona that you've had in the past. So, for example...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for example, I had to hang out with An one day, but I didn't have a lover's persona. So I went to the Compendium and I brought out my lover's persona, and I was all ready to hang out with An. Again, to get those points I was talking about before.
And you can do this, like, in, like, the real world. Like, I mean, you can't... Well, you can access the freaking...
Velvet Room
from the real world.
And yes, then, like, you can.
You can kind of do this at any time.
Yes, you can. You can also fast travel to it as well. So now related to these tips are all kind of connected. 3, 4, and 4.5 are all kind of connected. So I already mentioned before that you want to have the personas that are related to the arcanas of the confidants you're going to hang out with, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, there are some arcanas that you don't need to do this for. And here's the reason why. The reason why is that these characters, their personas, their confidant level... they level up with story progression or by completing a certain task. So you're not actually accruing those points by hanging out with them.
Mm-hmm.
So here are the arcana that I've found that you don't need to have in your party from my research. The three that you don't need are the Magician, Strength, or the Fool. Like I said before, because they're all directly related to progression or doing some other kind of task in the real world. So you don't need those arcana in your team.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Good to know.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's a good idea to do this tip.
Nice.
Now, the final tip is... So these are a little bit more specific, and these are a little bit more connected to, like, specific days. And you'll understand why when I say it. So tip number five, and this is the last tip I got for you, is these three locations that I think are super essential. So the first one is the bathhouse in Yongenjaya, which is where you live. The little onsen bathhouse near the laundromat. And here's why. Mm-hmm. On Monday and Thursday, it has a special bath that where if you go, you will have increased charm when you go. So every Monday and Thursday at night, make sure and try to go to the bathhouse because you get more points towards your different skills. That'll be more towards your charm skill.
Mm-hmm.
So then now part two of this is on Sunday, go to the drink stand in Shibuya and buy whatever they're selling from the drink stand, because even though it's really pricey, it gives you 1 point in a random stat. So it'll give you 1 point in knowledge, 1 point in whatever, but it doesn't spend any time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which we said before is time is valuable in this game.
Yeah, time is super valuable.
Yeah. And now my last part of tip five is on rainy days, go to the diner and study because you get increased knowledge. And you also get guts or kindness if you choose. And then on days that it says it has high pollen in the air, go to the Mementos dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go during a highly pollinated day, the monsters will be easier to fight.
Nice.
Yeah. And those are my five tips on how to best Persona as best you can.
There you go. Now, to piggyback off of those, I have a few that I was thinking of as you're talking. These are probably more minor than yours, but like the a couple I have off the top is use the map to travel. I realized that a lot of the time I was running around to different places, and so I'd take the subway. I'd try to navigate places myself. But if you press R1, you navigate your map. You can just fast travel to so many places, and it's a lot easier to navigate the world through that. Even within the school, you can fast travel to the library, fast travel to your class, do fast travel to different places that way.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two is what I want to actually ask you, because I was having trouble in the first dungeon because I wanted to make it a thing where I would complete the dungeon in 1 or 2 days, and that dungeon lasted me a week because I kept running out of SP, which is what you need for special attacks.
Yes.
Do you have, because I know there's one specific way to get SP in my head, but I don't know if you might have had a better way, because I know one way is you can make coffee in the shop.
That is one way.
And that's what I've been trying to utilize. Is there any other way to gain SP that you know of?
So there are some ways to gain SP. So from some drink vending machines, you can buy drinks that give you 5 SP.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, very small amounts, but you can do that. Other ways to get SP is when you are using your hold-up technique, you can ask for an item, and sometimes items given by some persona or some demons, they'll give you an SP item. Sometimes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, there you have it. Do we have any more things that any newcomers should know regarding Persona 5?
Newcomers, no, but I have, if you want to hear it, I have a little example of my schedule, if you want to hear it.
Oh, yeah, let me know.
Okay, cool. So, like I said, so I'm going to go through each day. So, Monday, always go to the bathhouse. Tuesday and Wednesday is free to do confidant stuff or to do story stuff or go to Mementos. Thursday, bathhouse again. Friday is use the payphone in the apartment, and I'm not going to say why. And also on Friday, you can buy yakisoba bread from the school, which will give you – it's very cheap. I think it's only 100 yen. And it gives you 30 HP.
That's good to know.
Yeah, super nice. Good. Yeah. Saturday, awesome. Payphone again. Again, not going to say why. It's a story thing. Sunday, go to the Shibuya drink stand and then also buy items on TV. And then I say here. Oh, wait, go on. You were going to say?
I was going to say, why buy items on TV?
Well, when you go to the TV on Sunday, it'll sometimes have this shopping network and you can buy certain items from there. And one time when I was playing, it gave me the opportunity to buy 50 adhesive bandages, which I think heal you for 10 or 20. And it was for 500 yen. Something super cheap. Something super cheap. So every once in a while, you'll get an opportunity where you can get something very special or very unique from the shopping network. So always keep your eye out on Sunday for whatever they're selling. So, nice. And yeah, so then I mentioned as well, on rainy days, go to the diner to study. On pollen, high pollen days, go to the Mementos or take care of the requests for the Mementos. Mm-hmm. And then down here, I wrote a little list of good ways to spend your time so you're not wasting your time. I wrote, every month there's a new movie and that increases a new skill or increases your skills. So go check out the movie in Shibuya. There is the Burger Challenge in Shibuya as well. Check that out. If you have 2 points in each skill, you can take the Burger Challenge, but then gives you more points as well. Making lockpicks in your room, that not only increases proficiency, but it also allows you to get higher level gear in the actual dungeon. And now down here, I have the two jobs that I think are the best jobs are the flower shop and the beef bowl shop. And here's the reason why. according to people that I know that have been playing the game for a while, getting your kindness up is one of the most difficult stats to increase later in the game. So one way to do that is to work at the flower shop.
Nice.
And the beef bowl shop is connected to a social link or a confidant. So go work at the beef bowl at night and that will increase a social link. And then the last thing I have here is feed your plant.
Nice.
Because that gives you kindness for free.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I did not know that. I didn't even know you had a plant. I'm only like 15 hours into this game, and I don't know how many hours you're in, but I feel like I've learned a lot from this.
Oh, like, did you actually? Okay, good.
Yeah, no, for real. Like, I feel I like most of the things you said are things I'm probably going to implement now, knowing that. And so it works out. For example, I didn't know you could hold more than one job. But yeah, nice.
Oh, yeah. Good to know. With the job stuff, you can hold as many jobs as you want. In fact, it's better to just accept all the jobs at once and then and then just go to whichever one you want. You just walk up to the door and you say, okay, I want to work here tonight. I want to work there tonight.
Nice. Dude, you're like a freaking Japanese fountain of knowledge, even though you're not Japanese.
That is me.
It works out. Cool. Let's get into questions. We only have a couple. Actually, we have a few. Our first question comes from Paul Warren. He asks, what games would you want to see on an SNES Classic? He says a SNES Classic, but I think that's because he probably says a SNES Classic, which for some reason bothers me. I don't know why it bothers me, but it does. he said might even need 50 instead of just 30 because the NES Classic had 30 games, and he's saying that like the SNES Classic is probably going to have more games because there's more great games on the SNES. Ian, do you have any thoughts on games you would like to see on the SNES Classic?
I mean, I would like... It's Super Nintendo, right?
Yeah.
Was Chrono Trigger on Super Nintendo?
Yes. I want to say yes. I know it was on PlayStation 1. I think it was on both.
Yeah, so I would say... This is going to sound like blasphemy, but I've actually never played Chrono Trigger. So I would like to have Chrono Trigger on there just so I would have a way to play it. So I would say Chrono Trigger, Super Mario RPG, Earthbound, whatever Final Fantasy game they want to put on there, Punch-Out, and yeah. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head.
You know you can get Chrono Trigger for Vita.
Really?
Yeah, it's on Vita, because it also released on PlayStation 1, and I think it's like a PS1 game that you can get, and so... If you really want Chrono Trigger, you can get it that way also. As far as for me, I think I have like all the same answers as you, like especially Earthbound. Like Earthbound needs to be on there. I don't know why Nintendo chooses to like ignore Earthbound and its existence, even though it's like one of the best RPGs. Mario World, Yoshi's Island, Super Street Fighter 2, Ultra, whatever it's called. There's so many words in that one. I can't think of many other ones because I didn't own a Super Nintendo. I've only played a Super Nintendo at my like friends' houses when I was younger, and so those were the games I just listed are like the games that I played, except for Earthbound, which I played like in high school on my phone for some reason.
All right.
And so yeah, I just hope it's dope. I personally, if I had to choose one to buy between the NES Classic and SNES Classic, I'd probably still get an NES Classic, but that's me personally because I have more of a. I'm more into the NES games like Mario 1, 2, 3 and like some of the other ones than I am the SNES. I just haven't been as close to the SNES as I probably would have liked to have been. I just want it to be dope though. Dylan Jones on Twitter at Big Dylan J asks how much of that ass is Game Over Greggy gonna beat next Friday? Do you know what this is about?
Yeah, I saw the video. Which was like both sexually arousing and also disturbing at the same time.
It was very disturbing. Greg Miller of Kind of Funny is holding a Mario Kart gameplay session. He's streaming it next Friday, or this Friday is the time you're hearing this. And it's going to be interesting. I think he's referring to specifically Zyger because Greg Miller is like challenging specifically Zyger and has like a bet going, which is going to be fun to watch. I don't know if I'm going to jump in and sign up because you can sign up to play. I'm going to have Mario Kart. I'm probably going to be at work, and so I don't know. Honestly, I think I might be pulling for Zyger on this one, just because like I'm homies with Zyger, and like Zyger needs a win. Not like he's been losing. Not, it's not like he's been losing or like he's like depressed. I mean, he might be depressed. I don't know. But like, it's not like he's like in like any like super dark place that I'm aware of. But I feel like, you know, Zyger could use a win because he's Zyger and, you know, he could just use a win. J.R. Oliver on Twitter asks, have you beaten Nier yet? And if not, why are you fucking up so badly? Now, Ian, you're not playing Nier.
Unless you are. No, not yet. I want to.
You're still planning on playing it.
Yes, 100%.
So, I beat my first playthrough of Nier. I've gotten the first ending. Like, the first, like, kind of official ending. Because there are, like, a bunch of random, like, funny endings you can get. But there are, like, five, like, legit endings. And I got the first one. And I was confused, which I think you're supposed to be confused. I felt like incomplete, which I feel like you're supposed to feel. And I just listened to like a whole podcast today talking about like playing the during your second and third playthroughs of the game. Like the stuff that you feel confused about gets fleshed out like a lot. Like it starts to feel like a lot more complete. And so I plan on going through with my second playthrough. I don't know when I'm going to start it up again. I might start it up soon. It depends. I might do like the next dungeon in Persona 5 and then jump back into Nier after I finish that dungeon, so I can have like a back and forth thing going. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. And so I've technically beaten Nier, kind of, but not really, because I haven't beaten like the other endings that I'm supposed to beat to like kind of feel complete with the game. And so I'm in a weird space with it, but I beat the first ending, and so hopefully that's enough for you, JR. But I think that's the show, though. Ian, do you have anything else to say just off the top? Do you want to like give a shout out to your moms?
Shout out to a new listener, Nisarge. So
nice.
Yeah, well, a friend of mine that I went to college with.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Did you tell them about the podcast?
I did, actually. So for those who don't know, a couple of episodes ago, I think we had a little rant back and forth about politics, and we talked about how it's important to find someone who is of different beliefs as you. And that's actually how Nisarge and I got back in like friendly terms, is that one day I saw him posting about the election and stuff, and I hit him up and I said, hey, man, you know, you have a different opinion as me. You know, let's talk it out. And we just talked for like hours and hours and hours about various different topics, about the Middle East, about war, about literally anything you can imagine. And we became like super friendly after that. And now we talk about any big thing that's happening in news, we just talk about it. And I mentioned I had a podcast, and he's like, no way, man, you know, like, let me listen to it. What's the link? What's the name? So now he's a listener.
Dude, that is dope. That is actually like really dope.
Yeah.
Yo, life is a beautiful thing. The thing about life is that like every life is different, and so when you have these differences come together like freaking plus and minus magnets, it's a beautiful magic thing happens.
Yeah, it's like me and basically, you it's like me and you just random occurrence, became friends, and now here we are.
Yeah, we're like magnets because magnets are like magic. Magnets really do blow my mind. I don't know if you knew this about me, but like every time I see a magnet work, I'm just like, how does that even happen?
You just
how
cry. Can people say there's not a God,
but there's magnets?
How can people say there's no God, but there's magnets?
When there's magnets.
All right.
I guess that's the name of the episode.
Yep. There you go.
I guess that's where we wrap up. Somebody's going to listen to this episode and like almost reach the end and be like, why did they name the episode that? And then they're going to reach that part and be like,
okay, can we please have a shirt that has the cross of Christ, but on each it's gray, and then on each side it has like the red and the blue that like looks like a magnet, and then on the top it says, how can you not believe in God but believe in magnets?
And then like you have on the other you have like the two other crosses, because like since there are like three crosses, whatever, and then on the other crosses they're magnemites from Pokemon, just like,
oh my God,
chilling.
We're stupid. Okay, end the show before we say more stupid shit.
Remember, you can find me on Twitter at Blessing Jr. You can find Ian on Twitter at Ian Why Not. The OKBeast Podcast is a gaming and nerd culture-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. We are the official podcast of OKBeast.com. If you like the show, remember to subscribe to us on your streaming service of choice. Visit OKBeast.com and follow at OKBeast now on Twitter. I've been blessing. That has been Ian. Ian, say bye to the people.
So, like, if magnets are Jesus, then what's Satan?